Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is August 22nd, 2005. Today's session is a forum of members of the ELCA Churchwide Assembly. Let's listen in.
Nancy Winder, and I'm on teaching staff as the village philosopher, and I've just been asked to facilitate this, so the ideal thing is that I say nothing except for as part of the discussion all night. So all five of these people were at the Churchwide Assembly, either as voting members or as observers or as part of other groups that were part of the whole assembly. And we're just going to hear from each of them to describe their own experience and then just be engaged in conversation. Is there anyone else here who was at the Churchwide Assembly? Okay. So whoever wants to go first. Go ahead, Christopher.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay. Christopher is a voting member.
My name is Christopher, and I serve as the operations manager at Holden Village. And a year and a half ago, in the spring of 2004, there was an election at the Eastern Washington, Idaho Synod Assembly in Spokane for those that had been nominated to go to Orlando at the Churchwide Assembly. And I came in third for the lay male slot. And there were two spots. And sometime, I think it was the middle of the winter, one of the other people couldn't go, dropped out. So I, as the first alternate, moved into that slot and got to go. There were nine of us from Eastern Washington and Idaho, two lay males, two lay females, two clergy, one multicultural, one youth, and our bishop. And so the nine of us traveled together to Orlando. And I want to give you a little bit of a picture of what it was like down there physically. And how many of you have been to an assembly like this, a churchwide assembly, another really large convention? Well, imagine yourself in a ballroom that's, I've been trying to decide how many feet it was, but it's maybe six or maybe even eight times as large as the village center. You know, this huge room, and it's full of chairs. And in the center section, there were 1,000 voting members, like myself, that were part of the delegations from 65 synods from all across the entire country. And then there was 500 registered visitors. And then there was maybe another 300 or 400 staff people, church council members, advisors, and other volunteers that were helping making this happen. So it was almost 2,000 people in this room. This huge room. And up front there was a big stage in which our Bishop Mark Hansen had a big pedestal up there that everyone could see him really well, and there were video cameras, and his image was in huge screens all around, so everyone could see very well. There was other large screens that whatever work we were working on was projected up, the words. So everyone could see it immediately what the wording was of whatever particular resolution or amendment that had just been made. And there was somebody else typing in everything that was said, so you could read it as well. And some amazing typer that could type as fast as people could talk. And that was projected up there as well. And all the voting members had a voting machine. So when we did vote, and we voted 100 times probably, that the results were instantaneous, and they were up there on the screen. You know, the green and the red bars about yes and no, and how many and the percentage of each. So we all knew immediately how everyone had voted, what the percentages was. And we were in this room for a week, for a solid week together.
Stuffy.
And yes. I don't know how many hours in plenary we spent, but it was all day, every day. Oh. And every day we also had a Eucharist service. I attended 8 during that week. Mm-hmm. We had Bible study almost every day. Evening times we had hearings to go to. We had other receptions and gatherings, and it was a very, very full time. Mm-hmm. From breakfast started at 6:45 in the morning, and I don't think there was a single night that I got to my room before midnight or sometime late in the evening. So it was a very full time. We had business to attend to. This book right here, 2.5 inches thick, was sent to all the voting members ahead of time, and we went through this book. I mean, there was a lot of things there that we dealt with. There was memorials and resolutions, and we voted for 104 people in different positions on the churchwide level. We listened to our ecumenical partners, the Catholics and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and the Lutheran Church in Canada. We had a rabbi speak to the group, so we heard from a lot of people. The church units all reported. We had reports of the bishop and the secretary and the vice president and all the church units, the Lutheran World Relief and the LSA and Lutheran Refugee Services and on and on and on. And of course, we dealt with the recommendations from the Sexuality Task Force. We spent well over a day on that, but there were many, many other things. We voted to affirm continued conversations for communion fellowship with the United Methodist Church, you know, which was a real exciting thing. We voted to basically restructure the entire national church body and with all the complexities of that. We voted to affirm the work of the Renewing Worship Group and our new worship materials. We spent the whole first night, 4 hours, 5 hours, adopting rules and getting all the mechanism in place for the week. So it was a very intense time, and it was a very exciting time. And the people in this room were not all bishops and pastors, but I sat next to a pig farmer all week. You know, these were the people of the church that came from everywhere to grapple with this stuff, and it was a tremendously exciting time for me to be there.
I guess I could go. My name is Ellen Maxson, and I'm staff coordinator, and I just finished serving on the ELCA Church Council for 6 years. This assembly was the last in my official duties, and it's the fourth one in a row that I've been to. The Church Council at the assembly pretty much... we've done a lot of this work to put this in place ahead of time, so we've heard all the reports before, we've heard all the arguments, and so a lot of this repeat for us, though at the assembly we don't have vote. We have voice, but only to respond to questions from the floor regarding, well, what was the church council thinking about this, or why did they do this? Right?
What were they thinking? Ellen had a chance to answer that question.
Yes. And I said, I don't have a clue. And I walked away. But yeah, so we didn't say a whole lot. I'd say maybe five council members spoke the whole time, except when they were up there in official capacities. And we brought the many of the resolutions that were before the assembly on the restructuring, on the sexuality recommendations, the renewing worship stuff, all that has went through our meetings in November and April. Any bylaw change we reviewed in April, any constitutional change we would have had to review in November, because you need 6 months notice of that. So that pretty much was, I don't know, we just wasn't quite as intense and didn't have to pay as much attention. We would go through this twice a year when we have council meetings, a binder that size, and we break down into committees and do it that way. And I have some impressions from the assembly, but I think I'll wait on those until people kind of explain their roles here.
Could somebody explain to me the difference between a resolution and a memorial, or what a memorial is?
Resolutions come from the floor. Memorials come to the church council from synods. Memorials come from synod assemblies. They're reviewed by a memorial committee before the assembly. Resolutions arise at
the meeting.
Right, and then recommendations and actions come from the church council ahead of time. So I may have misspoke there. I'm sorry if I did when I was explaining that. But yeah, memorials are kind of taken care of ahead of time. For instance, 65 synods this year sent memorials regarding task force recommendations, and those all were bracketed and pocketed, and the response from the church council on every single one of those was, the action of the assembly will determine the response to your memorial.
Is there some sort of tie-in when you're calling those memorials and the ordinary understanding of that word? So many people think of memorials as something in connection with somebody dying and then to remember that person.
I think it's just a synod memorializes something to the wider church.
It's probably like number 4 in the dictionary if you were to
look at the definitions. It has nothing to do with anyone dying or anything.
Robert's rule and
I think it comes out of the parliamentary term.
Well, I wonder why it ever got tied in with funerals and cemeteries.
There's another, there's different definitions of the word.
What's the stem root that it comes from?
She's a word person.
Maybe this is for Amy Carlson's workshop.
You can look it up. We'll look it up later.
I'm just curious.
There's an OED back there.
It's new to me.
I'm Jane Ralph. I serve the village as multicultural outreach coordinator, and I was at this assembly and actually every assembly that I've attended as a guest and as a registered guest, so I could be in the hall, one of those 500 people who paid to be there to listen to what was going on and to be a witness for the larger church and especially for people like me. Who were being voted on. I was ordained an ELCA pastor, and because I'm lesbian, I'm no longer recognized by the ELCA. So I could say I had a vested interest in this particular assembly. Where I'd say most of my vested interest was fulfilled was not so much in what happened legislatively, although I do respect the work of the 1,000 people who are out there trying to make sense of Robert's Rules of Order and say something cogent within the 2 minutes that they got, if they even got to a microphone. I think a lot of amazing work happened. However, I think what was most powerful for me were the conversations that happened in the hallway and the opportunities to talk with such a wide range of people about the issues of sexuality, but also about Holden Village and folks that I'd met here at Holden, or folks who said, boy, I've always wanted to go there. And so I could say, well, you know, we've got this sabbatical program, and we've got this partners in ministry thing, and, you know, you'd be great on teaching staff. And so it was a great opportunity to do my job, multicultural outreach. Also, I'd say one of the highlights for me was the 35th anniversary of the ordination of women. There was a wonderful banquet honoring those women and all women in ministry. One of the kind of poignant things about that was it happened about a day after the Commission for Women had sunsetted. The part of the restructuring was to eliminate the Commission for Women and the Commission for Multicultural Ministries. And the hope is that those ministries will be so embedded in all of the work of the church that they're not needed as separate entities. I have some fears about that. And I have a sense of loss that those two institutions are not part of the larger institution of the church anymore. So I've got some real bittersweet feelings coming out of the churchwide assembly. What I feel best about, I think, is that the group of us that were there, there was a group of us called Good Soil. Basically, our premise is that you plant things, and if it's good soil, they'll grow. And if you plant gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender pastors in ministries, either things will grow or they won't. And the Spirit is in charge of that. And give us a chance to see if the Spirit is going to do that. So we had an organizing group that went with that good soil image. And what was exciting was a lot of what we did during churchwide assembly was, for those of us who are pastors, we were simply available to give pastoral care, and a lot of it was needed. We had a worship service on Thursday night, the day before the vote was going in, that over 300 people attended. It was one of those after hours, you know, after they'd done all the work of the day, we had a worship service that started about 8:30 at night. It went for at least an hour and a half.
2 hours.
2 hours. Mary Croyce and Tom Witt and the others from Bread for the Journey were there to provide music. It was a wonderful celebration. And we had renewal of all kinds of vows, baptismal vows, ordination vows, blessings of relationships. And it was just a wonderful celebration for people to come together. And one of the powerful things for me was the bishop of the synod that I grew up in. He wasn't my bishop, but the synod he serves the synod that I grew up in. He and his wife of 40 years came to be blessed by me to reaffirm their vows. And it's those acts of ministry to me that give me hope for the church and give me hope for gatherings like that.
My name is John Brett. I'm currently serving the village as the area head for the dining hall, the Waitry. And I was at the churchwide assembly as a representative of the Eastern Washington, Idaho Synod to the Young Adult Convocation, which is a sort of associated program occurring during assembly on the same premises. And also at the churchwide assembly is a youth convocation, which happened during the first part of the week. So the youth convocation happened at the first part of the week, the young adult convocation at the second part of the week. We were there representing almost all the 65 synods to take part in some programming specifically organized for us, as well as to observe and be on the floor of the churchwide assembly to learn what we could about the workings of our church body. We also were responsible for crafting a report to the assembly floor from the young adult convocation and on behalf of young adults of the church. And I spent a lot of time helping with that while I was there, and was fortunate also to be able to help deliver some of it. I also participated as I could and my schedule allowed with Good Soil, and appreciated that opportunity. One of the things I did, having the permission under the rules of the assembly to be present on the assembly floor, stood in solidarity with a number of folks from Good Soil who participated in a direct action at the assembly, which some of you may have heard about. I'm sure we can talk more about later this evening. And that was also a very powerful moment. There were several other resolutions and actions that I was happy to see happen while I was in Orlando, or to hear about after that happened prior to my arrival. But particularly a resolution that came from this synod, the Eastern Washington and Idaho Synod, on asking churchwide, ELCA thinkers, theologians, leaders, to develop for our church a more clear statement and thought on what it means to be engaging in a Lutheran hermeneutic. So many of the questions that are coming before our church right now revolve around that. How do we look at Scripture? How do we look at the Gospel? How do we look at the Word of God, continuing revelation, the Word in Jesus? The Word is written down. The Word is, we're receiving it now. All of those things. And I think that in future years that will be very much a sort of sleeping issue that people might not be thinking about, but if action is taken on that resolution, I look for it to be one that causes quite a bit of discussion on the floor of an upcoming assembly. So I pulled that up for everyone to consider and look for. But I felt that was probably one of the most important items, because there's another assembly in 2 years, and another assembly 2 years after that, and down the line. I felt blessed to be at the assembly this particular year. And I said this last week. I felt blessed to be there and to be a part of conversations happening over lunch, in the hallways, like Jane said. In this precarious time in its more ancient sense, in being a prayer-filled time. that was another thing that I experienced during churchwide, was the abundance of prayer happening in the assembly hall from a variety of sources, whether it was from the bishop, whether it was from Good Soil, vigiling, whether it was happening in the hallway, whether it was during the Eucharist services, whether it was reports of prayers being made for the assembly from around the country in different congregations and synods. As I certainly know, prayer also happened here for the assembly. So that's another thing that I would like to hold up.
Just FYI, hermeneutic is a fancy theology word for interpretation.
Well, my name is Amalia Botts, and I just joined the staff today. I'll be working in the kitchen for just about 2 months. And I went to the assembly as a registered guest, like Jane. I was a volunteer with Good Soil. And I sort of went as part of my personal journey. I have really not been involved with the Lutheran Church for about the last decade. And I have gotten back involved through Lutherans Concerned, which is one of the organizations that was down there as a partner of Good Soil. My dad is the administrative assistant for Lutherans Concerned. And he's been bugging me for quite some time to get involved, and it is kind of embarrassing to be a queer person and to have your dad doing work, and he's telling me what's going on with the gay and lesbian community, and I don't know. So he really has been pulling me to get involved, and I started getting involved with the Reconciling in Christ program as a trainer. And that's probably many of you are familiar with that, but that's a process that Lutheran churches go through in order to become opening and affirming of GLBT people, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people. So I started doing that, and then the assembly was coming up, and my dad said, "Oh, you really got to go to the assembly. This is going to be, if you've met my dad, he's very compelling, and he's like, this is going to be a historic, and everything's going to happen here," and he got me, I really felt like I did need to go, and so I went as a volunteer. And my experience there was through Good Soil. There were about 100 or so of us who were there strictly to just volunteer for Good Soil. And we all went through nonviolent training, which was a really important part of the process, and learned what it means to do nonviolent protest. And we had a number of sort of impromptu worship services and prayer and other experiences like that, lots of singing and just spending time together. And then for what we did for our work was that we stood in vigil throughout the assembly on the sides of the floor in the visitor center, and we did different activities. We had many very large posters which had images of gay and lesbian families and their experiences, pictures of baptisms and weddings and commitment ceremonies, and just lots of images so people could kind of see what our experience has been. We just stood silently holding those. There's something called the Stoles Project, which are stoles that were made either by or for ELCA pastors who've been removed from the roster. And actually, I had never met Jane until like about 3 days here, but 2 days before I met her, I was wearing her stole. And it was pretty amazing, actually, because one thing that I always did when I would put on a new stole would read the story and sort of meditate on that person and their experience, and then I got to meet her. So so we stood in a long line as the people were going into the assembly and wore the stoles, and that was another chance for people to realize, like, well, we're not just voting on words. These are people's lives and people's faith and people's whole experience that's being affected by these resolutions. And then I was part of the act of civil disobedience, which we did on Friday when we moved onto the floor and we did not have permission to do it. And that was a very terrifying and first terrifying and then just incredibly uncomfortable experience. And I'd like to talk more about that. And then became a very incredible experience. But what I will say that both the work with Reconciling in Christ and that the experience at Good Soil for me has been just an incredible part of my faith journey, because partly why I feel welcomed by the group like Good Soil and Lutherans Concerned is because of my gay orientation. But I also think there are reasons other than that that I didn't feel comfortable in the ELCA. And to be in this group and in these worship services, I can't describe to you how welcoming they felt. And you feel like it doesn't matter what my different thing is or why I'm unusual or why I don't just look like average Minnesota Lutheran, but I feel you feel very comfortable to just be yourself and to be very welcomed. And it's very, very spirit-filled. The worship service on Thursday night was just incredible for me, and experiences I often have had at Holden but have been hard to find in other churches. And it's just, for me, a very powerful thing to be a part of spiritually, and I think it's very exciting to see what kinds of ways that the Spirit is working in the LCA right now through this movement.
Okay, do we should do a few questions now, and then you guys can give your impressions on particular things, like you mentioned, Ellen, especially one. So, any questions right now for everyone?
I'll add something really quickly. If you're worried or concerned about probably the most important decision that was revealed at the assembly, the color for the new worship resource is red.
Oh, yes. Oh, the red book.
Yes.
Cheerful note. Are there any questions?
They voted on that?
No, it's revealed.
Oh, it's
a whole issue. You might vote on those three things to vote on.
Yeah.
Well, I was curious if you felt there was a sifting down from the higher level, so to speak, of the Episcopal-Lutheran relationship. I know there's been dialogue, I kept up with it recently, of the two groups, but I understood at one time the Episcopalians were a little fearful of losing their apostolic succession. And sometimes things seem to go well on the higher level, but when you get to the local church, they can be a little more conservative or a little more fearful. I'm not saying I'm in a church like that, but did that come up with any discussion or importance?
The only way that keeps appearing is through Word Alone, which was an organization that was formed after we passed. It's called CCM, called the Common Mission, which was the agreement passed in Denver between the Episcopals and the Lutherans. So it happened in Denver 6 years ago, and Word Alone was a group that came out of that that does not believe in the historic episcopate. Mm-hmm. And they've been a resistance group. And then the next assembly, we passed the bylaw amendment that allows people going through seminary and ordination that if they object to the historic episcopate, they can opt out of it. So there's no problem. They're doing just fine.
Well, how do the, I know the Lutherans believe in only two sacraments, because I've talked to some important people, and they said that their definition of a sacrament was something that Jesus started,
yeah,
so to speak. Well, and I think the more conservative, they had us all memorize an outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual.
That's not really a part of, it wasn't a part of this assembly discussion.
It wasn't at all.
And
mm-hmm.
it's, we've lived into it really fine.
Good.
And I think one of the things that is exciting about the ecumenical relationships is there seems to be some grace space for having relationships, even though the exact theological understandings aren't the same. You know, whether it's with a growing relationship with the Methodist Church or the Reformed Churches or the Episcopal Church, and there seems to be some flexibility there, which I think is very healthy.
Yeah, sure.
I wish there was more of that flexibility around issues of sexuality, because to me there really seems to be a disconnect.
Yeah. I like to shock people sometimes by telling them, maybe I shouldn't even mention it here, but your son probably remember that it could work.
Not all of us, maybe.
Yeah.
But,
maybe I should whisper it.
No, but please go ahead. That's encouragement for everybody.
Beg pardon?
I'm sorry, that's encouragement for everybody, regardless of your position or opinion, to feel free to speak it.
Well, the fact that in the Jewish tradition, even long ago, it was considered very important for a fellow to marry, and it still is. The family is kind of the basis of love, worship, and knitting together. So, one, except for the reference to Peter's mother-in-law, there's not an awful lot of emphasis that all those disciples were married when they said, so long, I'm off for 3 years with this fellow, hiking and preaching and teaching and so on. So I just always felt that was an open thing, because many of the homosexual people I have met happen to be more sensitive, more creative, and maybe more expressive. So I thought those people could have been attracted by Jesus' charisma and wanting to go on a new mission. Now, I know that's very shocking to some people, but I'm just tossing it out because I think it's interesting to think of the the things we don't know for sure, and yet if the message is strong and the action made for some important differences, who cares?
Yeah, Jen.
I think most of the things I've heard about is from the assembly or renewing worship and the sexuality recommendations. Were there other issues that kind of were contentious or interesting, or could you just give a sampling of some of the other issues?
For me, one of the big ones was the there was a resolution brought to the floor by Bishop Rimbo, who has been here before, and it was entitled Peace, Not Walls, and it was really in opposition to the particular wall and barrier in between Palestine and Israel. And we heard from, over teleconference, from the bishop of the church in the Holy Land of Jordan about how the wall, as it's being constructed now, separates people from their hospital, it separates people from their croplands, from their schools, and that it was actually constructed on the Green Line as it had originally been agreed to, that would probably be fine, but it hasn't been. And some of the really virulent support for the wall and the calling for the need for that was shocking to me. I didn't expect that. It ended up passing overwhelmingly. Yeah, that there was it was not a small minority. It was, I would say, about a third of the folks were really, really in support of the wall. And it kind of was, what seemed, felt to me, and this is my impression, kind of almost Zionistic fervor that it harkens to some of the books, the Left Behind series type things that, I mean, I hadn't taken Barb's work quite as seriously as maybe I needed to, with Barb Rossing, who's written a kind of antithesis to the Left Behind series. But that was kind of a wake-up call for me,
The man that I sat next to was opposed to that particular resolution. I had an opportunity for a little bit more conversation with him, and he had a couple of points. One was that we weren't hearing from Israel in this. We were only hearing one side in the way that the material was presented. So we didn't really know what their explanation might be. And it may be that it wouldn't stand up, but we didn't know what it was. And that the wall has demonstrated a reduction in terrorist attacks. I mean, it has been effective in that regard. So people do feel safer. And lastly, the language in the resolution was inflammatory. And that's what he felt. And others felt as well. So that was part of the conversation. So even though it did pass, this happened on several other issues too, there was prolonged conversation, and I thought really good conversation on a number of these things. But in the end, the body voted with a large margin to support these things.
What was very interesting about that conversation for me was Lou, who, and a number of other people who were very opposed to the gay and lesbian issues, were at this point saying we hadn't heard from Israel. They weren't part of the conversation. But for the task force, the gay and lesbian people were not part of the conversation either. But it was interesting that it mattered there, but it didn't matter in other places, which I thought was interesting.
For all of us here who haven't been intimate with some of the things that have happened with the recommendations of the task force that came out last January. I don't know if the church council changed any of those prior to the assembly. And could you, somebody summarize for us in 5 or 6 minutes how each of the recommendations was voted?
That was pretty much a whole day's work, so.
One entire day.
And lots of amendments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The church council in April went through the 3 recommendations of the task force, so I'll do that piece.
Okay.
And number 1 was to live together faithfully and find ways to live together without differences. That passed at the church council, passed at the assembly with a lot of discussion. I was surprised.
But it passed.
Which supposedly would lay the groundwork. At the church council, the 2nd one, which was on blessings, which in essence really just stated what we have presently been doing. It didn't change anything. It lifted up the bishop's letter, which is about a dozen years old, and the bishop's letter still wasn't policy, which the bishops don't make policy, so it couldn't be. And it said that they find no tradition or biblical basis for doing blessings, but in, under reasons of pastoral care, maybe. Okay, it's not, and it's not that specific yet. At the church council level, that's the only recommendation that we altered at all, and we took a whereas, which was talking about giving pastoral care to same gender couples, and moved it to a resolve. And that created all sorts of chaos prior to the assembly, and that was the big debate on the assembly floor, because since it mentioned same gender couples, those who are very opposed to this felt that was opening the door more. So on the assembly floor, do you remember what happened, Christopher?
Well, there was an amendment to change the wording from same-sex couples to all to whom they
to all minister. People.
To all to whom they minister.
Right. So in other words, they didn't want the pastoral care to, even though it's a resolution about GLBT people, they didn't want the pastoral care to be specific to same-gender couples. So we moved it down. We thought, we didn't think we were doing any big deal thing. That created this commotion. As a matter of fact, 2 synods came to the church council prior to the assembly and really very much demanded, what does this mean? Does this mean blessings can be done or not? And the church council said, it means what it means. Pastoral care is pastoral care. And they wouldn't give a clear.
And there was a lot of attempts to make it clear.
Yeah,
right.
To make it clear and be more restrictive, and to make it clear and have us be more possible, and all those failed.
Right. Yep.
I mean,
every amendment.
The assembly wanted it to be vague,
yeah.
And it passed.
And it really didn't. It just stated the status quo. It doesn't change a thing. It's absolutely the way things have been. There's some congregations that do it. There's some synods that it's okay. There's some bishops that don't like them. There are pastors doing it. There's some congregations and pastors that won't do it.
I think it's more than the status quo, though.
I would agree.
I talked to quite a number of pastors who now felt that they had a group, a place to come in and do blessings where they didn't feel like they
really?
Had before.
I would feel also that it was very clear to me, sitting on the assembly floor, through debate and dialogue, it was made clear on the assembly floor, partially through the ambiguity, partially through the discussion about the ambiguity, that pastoral care can include, although may not necessarily include, the blessing of 2 people in a same gender relationship, and even a blessing of that relationship.
Which is how it has been. And two bishops who were there when the bishops originally wrote the letter, Don McCoy from Philadelphia or wherever, stood up and said, I was there, and we meant that it does not mean a blessing.
And somebody else stood up.
And I don't know if it was Peter or Bob Rimbo.
No, it was Rimbo because he wasn't a bishop then.
Even
Bishop Chilstrom.
Stood up, maybe it was Chilstrom, stood up and said, I'm sure that pastoral care meant it.
Well, he didn't say it in so few words. But.
Right.
And in past life, 67%. Voted yes.
Right. Right.
Given all of the discussion and dialogue, it passed by over 2/3.
Yeah. Barely.
So did they agree to disagree? I mean, was there any discussion like that? And that the church, Lutheran Church, is big enough to hold people of various beliefs, that, and you don't necessarily have to agree, but you could still call yourself Lutheran?
I think in terms of blessing, yes. I think if the language had been marriage, that would have been something different. I think because basically pastors can bless helicopters, pastors can bless bathrooms.
Motorcycles.
You know? So, you know, I think...
Bridges.
There was a resolution brought later to try to define marriage as simply between one man and one woman. I don't know if that actually got to the floor. In part because Luther's pretty strong that marriage is the business of the state, and the blessing of relationship is the work of the church.
And
so I think that's why that didn't go.
And number two only required a majority because it was not a policy change or a bylaw change.
So. Yeah, it recommended no change in policy,
right,
and that passed.
Right.
So there's no change.
Well, that's maybe a little oversimplified, I think. I think that... it moved beyond the status quo. That's how, what
I think the proof is going to be in how it's lived out.
Yes.
And I do think that there's space for some pastor to say, okay, I can live this out, who maybe didn't feel that before. But it's going
to... The pastors that wanted to and were a little bit nervous about it, I think this is giving them just a little bit of an encouragement to go ahead.
And number three, then, the church council did not take the specific recommendation of the task force. The specific recommendation of the task force. It crafted a vehicle that hopefully reflected some of the task force report. And the term that was used in April when we were discussing this was creating space. Can't there be some way to create space for gay and lesbian pastors in committed relationships to serve the church?
But not change the policy.
But not, clearly don't change the policy. But, and that was presented to the council in April in the form of a bylaw, which it did not need to be in the form of a bylaw. But since it was in the form of a bylaw, that automatically requires 2/3 vote. So... That was a very interesting
maneuver.
Thank you. I was looking for a more neutral word, but since you said it,
he said it.
That happened in April, and I would say that the April council meeting was a mirror image of what went on at the assembly. In other words, all the amendments to 2 and 3. That happened at the assembly, pretty much happened in our council meeting, and same result. Go through them all, and nothing changes.
The only difference is the council did recommend to move forward with the recommendation 3, this an exceptional route to ordination for gay and lesbian people in same-sex relationships, and the church-wide assembly did not pass it.
But it was a virtual tie,
right?
Although it required 2/3.
Right.
And at the
13 votes separated.
Yeah.
At the churchwide council,
a swing of 7. It's defeated by 7 votes essentially.
Well, it had to have 2/3.
Well, I know.
If it had been
right, exactly. As far as the majority, right.
At the churchwide council, there were just 2 people who voted against recommendation 3. I was one of them because I felt that it codified an unjust way of treating a certain group of people,
yeah,
which I think is not Lutheran and not gospel, and the other guy voted against it because he doesn't think there should be space made. So out of the 33 council members, 2 voted against it. So.
And there was, my understanding was that good soil was not in favor of it either.
Correct, but we had a platform that we developed. I was part of the leadership team of Good Soil before I came to Holden. We basically, through a consensus model of our 6 organizations, came up with a platform that we felt would meet what we felt full inclusion would look like. And we wanted to do that far in advance so we didn't get in the heat of the moment and say, okay, well, they're doing it. No, they're not. Yes, they are. And get all confused. And we were able to stick to that pretty well. And we felt that exceptional route to ordination was not, we felt the justice demanded more than that. And so we were actually opposed to it, and we went to our civil disobedience before that. When the decision was made not to change the ban on ordination, that's when we moved into our civil disobedience mode.
And that's an important thing to consider when looking at the sort of margin of the vote totals on Resolution 3. When there are, what, 30 to 50 voting members?
Voting members were not bound by what we said. We encouraged people to vote their conscience,
right.
And there were vast disagreements.
Right, and there were vast disagreements amongst the Goodswill folks. But it's important to notice that amongst those people who would otherwise be advocates for change, mm-hmm. there was a significant number that did not vote for this particular
right.
resolution.
Yeah.
And so that would sort of show, I think, maybe a momentum or the outcome of as far as what's reported in the national press on how the assembly voted and what that means for the future of the church might be quite different with that little piece of information.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm confused. Can you say what they were voting on again? What it ended up being?
Well, there was the bylaw change that created a special route for gay and lesbian people in committed relationships. That's what was brought to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
There were
six or seven
amendments to that. And the way the assembly dealt with those, they started with most change to least change.
Mm-hmm.
So the most change vote came right away, and that
mm-hmm.
was change the policy. Change V&E, just make it level playing field for everyone. When that failed, that triggered the Good Soil action.
And so 95 of us, for the next 2 hours or so, were standing up in front of the assembly. And our reason for doing that was to say we've tried to be part of this conversation for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and we've kept, our faces have not been in front of you. And so our action was very simply to just stand up in front
mm-hmm.
silently and just have people have to make decisions with us in front of them.
And that got a third. Two-thirds said no to that, one-third said yes.
I don't know if other people would find this interesting, but can you describe or summarize the exceptional process a little bit and how it differs from ordination?
What it basically did was a congregation and person who wanted to be ordained who was gay or lesbian in a committed relationship would have to first seek approval of the synodical bishop, then the synod council, and the congregation would have to go along in that process too. And then they would have to go to the conference of bishops to seek approval. And no other person for ordination has to go to the conference of bishops to seek. The exception for CCM requires that a person go to their bishop, and that bishop then, in consultation with the presiding bishop, then that person can be ordained in this exceptional way. So it's one of the amendments was to try and make it the same as people who sought an exception for CCM, and that failed
mm-hmm.
too.
One of the other interesting amendments that failed was a resolution that was put up to basically keep vision and expectation and our current standards in place. So even though by defeating the recommendation, the current policy stays in place, the assembly didn't vote to keep the current policy in place. They
45%.
Voted that down too.
45%.
So you can't. We couldn't get a majority for that.
Could you please tell people what vision and expectations
mean?
Mm-hmm. Vision and expectation is a document that's used for all rostered clergy. It's kind of the bar by which we're supposed to be measured. It contains a lot of wonderful things on economic justice, on all kinds of ethical issues. The one sentence that's really it's applied to is individuals who are homosexual in their self-understanding are precluded from ordained ministry.
Unless
you remain celibate. So that's kind of that's the sentence that brought the whole thing into being when three gay seminarians came out at the end of their seminary experience, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we better put a policy in place, and so this got put in place.
And that was put in place by the church council, a majority vote, And to change that, it had to go to, they were talking about it going to the assembly and two-thirds vote. So that was some of the struggle, and that's what the struggle on Monday night, or when you came in from your airplane. That's why it took 4 hours to figure out what required two-thirds vote and what required 50% vote.
You want to talk about your experience in the action?
Okay. Actually, one thing I was going to say.
Were you at the end of your book?
It really struck me several times, or many times, actually more than several times, just how many times the idea of family or marriages or being a parent was brought up in conversation. And just casually, like, I remember one time when the bishop was, because they kept mixing up their titles. He called the secretary Reverend Bishop, and they were joking about that. And he said, oh, you know, I'm a bishop, I'm a pastor, I'm a father, I'm a husband. And other times like that, like that's when it really like hits me, like how much ELCA values families and marriages, and we identify as fathers and mothers and husbands and wives and everything. And that's like the difference. Like if Jane were a pastor in the ELCA, she couldn't say, you know, I'm a pastor, I'm a partner. You know, that's the big difference. And it's just so, it just kept striking me over and over as I was standing there. Because we were in vigil, it's a very meditative state, and you sort of, I think the words really came in and really stuck with me in different ways than they might have been if I was sitting there in Christopher's position and trying to think about it from a legislative process, or legislative perspective. But anyway, that was just something that continued to stay with me.
I'm curious, did anyone ever have the nerve to challenge the people who felt strongly against ordaining homosexuals to find some place in the Gospels where Jesus spoke against them?
Oh yeah, that's been asked.
You did find it?
Been asked many times.
Well, what's the answer?
I
can only find it in Leviticus, and he said if your kids misbehave, stone them to death. A lot of bad things long ago. And St. Paul, who seemed to have had other problems too. But if we want to call ourselves trying to follow the Spirit of Jesus, don't we then have to be logical as to what it stands for?
That's what this whole discussion's been about.
Lots of people had a lot of nerve.
Yeah.
There was
no shortage on all
sides, in with and under the issue.
Well, and I also want to say that those folks who most oppose me serving as a pastor in the ELCA, many of them are lovely people.
I
got to know one who was a childhood friend of Christopher's very well, and he, you know, every night, you know, we would, you know, bless you, Roy, bless you, Jane. And the last night, as we were getting ready to leave, he came up to us and said, you know, there weren't any winners here. And we said, yeah, we know. And then he said, well, bless you both. You want to say your line?
And I said, Roy, do you realize you just blessed the lesbian and he goes,
No,
I was blessing you people. And I said, that's our point, Roy. So,
what was the kind of general feel after there was this 500 vote? What was kind of the feel of the room or the space or people around you?
When the vote happened to turn down the first thing, I was really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, the church was saying no to full inclusion. At the end, when it didn't pass, I was glad, to be perfectly honest. I was glad the last thing didn't pass.
I mean, by then you could predict how these were going to come out.
It was going.
We had so many votes, and there were so many versions and amendments and so forth, that you could kind of see how things were falling into line.
I think it was still, I mean, did you say under your breath it was all over the map? Because I was in the end, in the end I was glad that it didn't pass, but it still felt, it was still, there was so much emotion of standing there and facing, we kept looking into the eyes of different people and maybe supporters and maybe opponents, and it was just a very raw feeling, I think, for a lot of people. And the bishop several times had us sing together. While we were standing up, we sang Beautiful Savior and we sang Lord of All Hopefulness.
That was good.
And those were very emotional moments. And some people like came up and brought their hymn books, voting delegates brought their hymn books up so people in vigil could sing. Also, there were hymns that almost all of us knew by heart, so we were all singing.
And that was interesting, seeing people's eyes, especially, you know, when we walked up front, there were some people who, I mean, you could literally feel hearts softening, but you could also feel hearts hardening and just looking into different people's eyes. But when we were all singing, some of the people who I felt there was a hardness, it was like, wow, you all know that by heart too. And it's like, but it's just that little, because the stereotypes of who we are were broken down at least a little bit. And there were just so many people in tears and so many people who did come up. And it was interesting after they finally adjourned for the day and we decided we'd just stay in place until everyone left, and a number of people came up to talk to us, and we were consoling many of the voting members who either felt they had let us down or just felt bad, because, you know, I think by that point our investment in the legislative change was gone. You know, it was almost a relief, because it's like, okay, you know, that wasn't good, but we're done with that part of it. Mm-hmm. And they weren't done. Their work was still going on.
I wonder why the Congregational Church, the UCC, fully embraces the open church and the homosexual. I mean, after all, they're human. Why would they be different from all the other branches of Protestantism?
Well, we've got a UCC pastor in our midst. At least one.
Are you?
There may be some other positive UCC pastor.
Well, I served in the UCC church for long. I don't happen to be homosexuals, but I have lots of good friends who are. I don't know how to say this so that other people won't be offended. What do you think makes them have a different spirit of acceptance? It's been a long time, and they were among the first to elevate a woman into the ministry. They have quite a history.
That's a question for a different time.
Yeah.
Is that? Okay.
Yeah. It's important to know that different denominations have different ways of addressing this subject. But we're trying to hear tonight how this one church body does. So, I mean, I think it's an important conversation. I'm not trying to derail your question.
Yeah.
But I think probably we're trying to understand how the ELCA does this piece.
As far as people's responses to, I think particularly the sexuality recommendations, resolutions. I had some friends who were part of the young adult convocation who were going to a program after the assembly closed on Friday, and they ended up in the wrong part of the hotel outside of where the Solid Rock Lutherans were gathering. And I can tell you that both Good Soil and Solid Rock were celebrating at the end of the week. And, you know, that tells you something about the ambiguity of the statements and what happened, and where there were no winners.
And I think for us, part of the excitement was, I'm on this parallel roster of Lutheran clergy called the Extraordinary Candidacy Project. This is my shirt. And that one of the members who is kind of working on placement for us was like, this is great, because I've been hearing for 4 years, well, let's wait till after Orlando, And now she's like, there's no waiting, you know? And we're just going to keep moving forward with ministry where and how we can. And there's plenty of ministry to be done. There's more than enough.
Are you saying that it looks like there is virtually no change in church policy, but that there's great hope that at the grassroots level, congregations and certain clergy and certain bishops will be likely to be moving ahead and making change from the bottom up?
I think so, and I think there are a lot more closeted clergy who are going to come out. Two people came out, one in hearing of 600 people. He's serving in good standing in Chicago. Another pastor from Santa Monica came out on the assembly floor, you know, and said, I need to tell you about my partner. I can't keep this a secret anymore, and serve in good faith. So people are taking more stands and being more out there with who they are. And I don't think that's going to change. And I hope that we don't just have to pick up the pieces of broken lives, because we've had to do a lot of that.
There was, you know, a lot of things going on, and only one of them was the votes,
right,
and the resolutions and so forth. And I think we did, you know, move a little click ahead. You know, we declined to make things worse, and we did pass number two.
Yep.
But the other thing that went on was immensely valuable was the conversation that took place with all these people from all these places in the hallways and on the assembly floor. And people getting up to the microphone and telling their story, what was going on in the hallway. And that's going to have impacts in this church that can't be documented by the computer screen popping up on the screen about how the vote went.
Two quick things to highlight, maybe that have nothing to do with the section, obviously.
Can I just ask one question, then we'll go on? It is 9:35. We do try to keep it an hour. It doesn't mean the conversation can't go on, but just want to make a little break point here. People do feel they want to leave. And I also want to just make sure that in the room, is there anybody who has wanted to say something or ask a question that you haven't felt able to do so to this point or would like to? Is there anything? Yeah.
What's the consequence for a church that decides to call a pastor from the ECP roster?
It doesn't have to be anything.
The bishop may discipline.
Is there a policy on that?
The bishop, yeah, there's a policy. The bishop may discipline, but it's not a shall. Some bishops have chosen to discipline. Can be anything from a letter saying you've broken the rules, you know,
kicking
to expelling the congregation. Mm-hmm. And both of those things have happened in the last year. Mm-hmm. Most of the congregations who have called ECP pastors have received no discipline. And we imagine the same range will continue to happen. The general public gets really mad about churches getting kicked out. Because maybe people don't like gay pastors, but they really don't like big church institutions messing with local congregations. Mm. That's my own analysis. I'm pretty wrong about that.
Thanks.
Anything else?
I would put out a plea to any of you who are at all inspired by this, please go to your own synod assembly and get elected to go to the next churchwide assembly. Because there's lots of good church work that needs to be done, and it takes a lot of work. So prayerfully consider that.
Ellen, you have one thing you want to say?
Yeah, just real quickly. One of the biggest things that struck me was in the first couple days of the assembly, in Mark's report and in hearing from ecumenical partners and things like that. The ecumenical relationships and the full communion relationships that the ELCA has was really lifted up as this is the one denomination that really is seeking these relationships. And what hit me all of a sudden was we don't have table fellowship or full communion within our own church because gay and lesbian people are not welcome at all sides of the table. And that's exactly what full communion partnerships are about with the Episcopals, the Reformed, the UCC, the Methodists. And we don't have it within our whole church. So that was just a real disconnect for me in what we lift up and are proud about, but then yet we're not doing it in our own church. So that was kind of an aha. There's a lot of good soil buttons there. Any of the stuff up here, you guys can have pens, you know, all that. I'm not saying we're ending, but I just wanted to
start. I'd like to see the church move on. We've spent so much time on this one issue that we've lost a lot in that we're not, you know, we're just dwelling on this. And God will take care of this. The Spirit.
$700,000 was spent by the church during the last 4 years.
To maybe bring us a click forward.
Good Soil spent $70,000 to be there. Just think of all the mission that could be done. But unless all the GLBT people leave the church, this is going to keep coming up until it's changed.
And as long as we keep baptizing babies and not asking those things.
And the change is not necessarily happening on the assembly floor. I mean, the change is happening in the church.
It absolutely is.
And the assembly will catch up to it.
Yeah.
But well, the other thing is I hope that one thing you can all take from this session tonight is the way in which, with the very clear and articulate and thoughtful kind of leadership that all these people brought to their relationship to this assembly and this issue, and that goes on. I mean, this is everything's done so well and thoughtfully and prayerfully, and from my perspective, that's quite encouraging, you know, in terms of how then good soil is set, essentially, for all kinds of good things to happen in our church, and just the kind of positive responses that were brought from the assembly itself, you know, despite all the difficulties, I think is a good sign of hope for the church getting, you know,
and so to
move it ahead.
Pull from Gandhi, we need to be the church we seek.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Quickly, because I missed it earlier, one of the things that the young adult convocation noted is that in the new structuring of churchwide, there's finally, for the first time within the national office of the ELCA, a position specifically devoted and funded for young adult ministry. The ELCA had not had a position for that prior, and that's very important. However, it also notes that across the ELCA, throughout all synods and regions, positions and funding for youth ministries are being cut, or put to half-time or quarter-time. And these are the ministries that are developing the future leaders of the church. And for the most part, they're being neglected, though we're happy to see that one change at the national churchwide level. Campus ministries are also feeling a crash.
Well, church membership is going down. Budget is suffering as a result. And that's one of the things we discussed and struggled with.
So anyway, thank you all very much for sharing and all for being here. Please continue to engage in conversation with one another, look at all the information, and thank you.
Thank you.